tell you what, all I'm trying to do, I think the broad definition we've got of highway, and whether it be broad or not, but I'm trying to allow specifically the guy that wants to unload his cattle in a pasture to be able to do it when he can't get the truck off the highway.
But how do you do that without letting everyone else and every other business unload whatever they choose to unload with whatever flagman they determine to have, with whatever standards of flags or lack of flags or
something? What about loading a calf?
I don't object to what you're trying to do. If it can be done safely under standards, then that's the problem.
That's what I'm suggesting they do. You know, the thing you got to remember is there are a lot of just plain practical problems. You know, the logger wants to load his cat down here, and you know, if you get out in the country, there are a lot of places where you bring that cat right down off the road, and there's no place to get off, so it's not practical to get off. So I'm saying, if you require him to go up the street and stand there and wave the people down. You know, these aren't big instances, but they're the kind of instances that Representative Stoltz and I get every day when some enterprising individual gets a ticket. So I can't see why, Stan, we can't fit in.
Well, I would suggest to you that when you put the language in, what we're likely to end up with is a provision that private citizens can abrogate the provisions of a wide segment of the state law for their convenience under conditions that may be dangerous or may be a disconvenience to the rest of the public. I raised this point from my personal experience working in summers. I stopped traffic to allow mobile homes to move in and out and argued that that needed to be done. And the interim committee felt very strongly that we had to have standards and that just opened the thing wide up for anyone to stop traffic on the highway should be standards.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to satisfy my objection, if you want to allow a farmer to stop on the highway, I'll accept that as a compromise amendment.
We're going to have an omnibus farm exemption to the bill, Dick. Or at any time the bill might be construed against if it's a farmer, so that's an automatic waiver.
Oh, I'd accept that too. Michael,
we still see having an amendment already.
No, I mean, I'm quite serious about this. It's a practical problem in semi-rural areas.
When's the last time somebody got arrested in your area convicted for doing something like that?
Oh, I'm not sure, but it hasn't been too long ago.
Is that because somebody had a head-on kind of?
Oftentimes, an officer comes along and it's some enterprising officer. I mean, I think you really got some, you know, very legitimate problems here to solve. And I don't think you solve the practical problems of living by prohibiting everything.
Just to go a little further, you know, we had testimony in the interim committee that in busy streets there were construction projects, that there were wide abuses, and I think Bob may remember some of the testimony in this area, where the practice is not uniform.
Okay, this is outside of business or residence district.
Well, I have a hard time seeing how you justify it for one segment of the economy and not the rest.
We do that every day.
If we were going to exempt certain areas, I think at least there should be standards as to the kind of flag or the kind of stop sign and the kind of treatment that people had to have so that every citizen of Oregon knows when they come upon that what they're supposed to do. Because I've seen people whiz by an unofficial flagman and others stop, and it's a very unsafe condition.
A very good friend of mine was a flagman who got killed. Hot dog didn't know what to do with it. Like anytime we start carving out that kind of exception, we're going to buy more trouble and accidents. Work.
You've got to have that kind of exception. The whole problem is whether you have a practical bill or not.
Mr. Chairman, I just talked to LBJ concerning him. He said there are instances, certainly, where his people are confronted with the necessity of being on the highway.
I'll tell you, a much better example in my cattle truck is the lowboy that's going to load a cat. much better example.
Now, there's an exception, at least in the first subsection 1, to that when it's practical, stop park leaves vehicle standing off the roadway. Now, certainly if there's no truck breaks down or he pulls it up.
I don't understand the two sections.
Well, I think Bob's pretty finger on it. Probably the exigent circumstances are taken care of already in the bill.
When you read section 96, I don't think that
you gotta read the two.
How does that compare with existing law?
Well, essentially the same. Both of those 43.362 basically the same as what we have in section 95. So 483.364 essentially the same
roadway.
When it is restated,
the
basic prohibition for the same, and I think
the
respect for the distances,
the weather, the temperature, all that, on any highway, unless. Now, we really aren't questioning.
And the Interim Committee was not told of any problems they were having under existing law.
Let's find out what the definition between highway and roadway is. Where is roadway defined?
Probably the first 12 definitions.
Roadway means that portion of a highway improved, designed, or ordinary use, exclusive of a shoulder. In the event a highway includes two or more separate roadways, the term roadway. Okay, then let's see. Highway. Your real question there is the question between highway and roadway. It's all right to park on. But it's not all right to park on a highway.
Dick, do you feel like you can unload your cattle now?
You can do it. I'm not sure whether it's legal or not, but they do it.
This is just a new restatement of existing law.
All I'm saying is that existing law is just. Okay, define the difference between a roadway and a highway.
Well, roadway under this bill is doesn't include the shoulders, and highway does. Is that correct?
And that'll be the only difference. Okay. Roadway is travel portion. See this then? The next section even precludes stopping on the shoulder of the road to unload the cap. On lines 27 through 32 on page 45.
Where's that now? Section 96.
Okay. Section 95, page 45. It says you can
that's upon the roadway, not the shoulder.
Okay, roadway is a traveled portion.
Yeah.
It says it's an offense to stop, park, or leave standing a vehicle on the traveled portion when it's practical to get off.
Okay.
The next section says it's a person shall not park or leave standing a vehicle, whether intended or unintended, on a highway, unless, so that I guess highway includes shoulder. Okay? Now we've decided that the guy can't even stop his truck on the shoulder and load the cap.
Unobstructed width of the highway opposite standing vehicles left for the passage of other vehicles.
Okay, and
in other words, he's got to leave some room there to pass vehicles.
Okay, it's a question of visibility, Bob.
Okay.
Can't you find a place down the cattle that you can see 200 feet?
In other words, you can't block the road. That provision is you can't block the road.
I'm saying that's fine. I.
Okay.
Okay.
So A, then you say B. Gotta have B too. you've got to be able to see for 200 feet each direction.
That's right. Or I'm suggesting C, or you provide flagmen, which adequately give notice of the danger.
Well, not.
Anyone that objects to moving House Bill 1011 to the floor with a due pass recommendation?
It's already in the SB1.
No, but it doesn't become effective until July.
Is there any objection to that motion? None appearing. It's ordered by unanimous consent.
I didn't see the engrossed delay.
Just like that.
You have another. The suggested amendment is, or to provide adequate notice to the motoring public. It's suggested section C.
Take the place of the 200 feet requirement.
Objection to the amendment?
To providing flagmen?
That's what I'd presume.
I'm not sure. I'm just not sure. That might be safer than the...
Safer than the 200 feet, frankly. But
it could be, but I can see all kinds of circumstances where... what you're doing is you're authorizing a private citizen to block the road completely.
No. The amendment says that a person shall not, I'll read the language, you have to read the amendment in context. A person shall not park or leave standing a vehicle, whether attended or unattended, on a highway, unless he has to do one, clear an unobstructed width of the highway opposite the standing vehicles left for passage of other vehicles. I presume that means one lane is left for passage of other vehicles.
Yeah, right.
Is that my interpretation correct? Okay. And this is the problem, and the standing vehicle is visible from a distance of 200 feet in each direction along the highway. I'm suggesting alternatively to that, in other words, either it's visibly 200 feet, or you provide adequate notice to a flagman of some sort.
Well, under that language, you could have it standing there for 3 days.
But you can, under the present law, Dave, you can leave it there 3 days, as long as it's visible 200 feet. So under present law, you can leave the thing parked on half of the highway, visible for 200 feet.
There's another provision in the law that prohibits that.
Okay. Okay, is there an objection to the amendment? Okay, I think that takes care of all my amendments. Okay, Representative Marks had an amendment which we delayed until you returned.
Which adopts the definition of careless and reckless driving rather than dangerous driving 1 and 2. Same language, everything.
Same penalty.
Same penalty.
Reckless driving to be treated in the same manner as dangerous driving 1. Careless to be treated in the same manner as dangerous driving 2.
Do you have additional amendments, Representative Gilmore?
No. I have a question, Mr. Chairman, in respect to this motion. Does it also then speak to the suspension? the mandatory suspension?
No.
As the bill now is, following our amendment the other day, taking the mandatory suspension out for two convictions of dangerous driving, two, would we then reword it so that there would be a suspension for two convictions of reckless driving within 6 months?
Yes, all the other references.
Okay, is there objection to the amendment? None appearing, as ordered by unanimous consent. Is there any other member of the committee which is desirous of an amendment to the bill?
Could you address the things before I got here about which I was concerned?
No, we addressed them in there on an additional list, which we'll consider after our recess.
Are you ready for a motion of the bill?
No. Are there any additional amendments anybody wants to vote on?
I have a few technical
amendments. Are those relating to the mufflers?
Yes, sir.
We adopted some new amendments.
Hello.
Is Representative Gustafson in agreement with
your
latest set of proposed amendments?
Thank you.
Well, he
was away to me, but if I might address them, I don't think they're very obnoxious.
You saw these?
Yes, sir. Dealing with Representative Gustafson's amendment on subsection B, after the word notice, and what we're saying here is specify that a citation for violation of this section will not be issued if proof that the vehicle complies with standards for the controlled noise emissions adopted pursuant to ORS 467.030 is presented within 60 days of the police agency issuing the notice. And then we would add, proof for the purpose of this section shall be a certificate issued by the DEQ, comma, an affidavit certified by a business providing automotive repair, or a test administered by the police agency issuing the notice, except that such agency must provide a test upon demand. Because we don't talk about what the proof is. And I think there's a question there in terms of what is the police agency going to accept. Would be proof for the purpose of this section shall be a certificate issued by the DEQ. Yes, sir.
An affidavit
certified by a business providing automotive repair, or a test administered by the police agency issuing the notice, except that such agency must provide a test upon demand. Now, as you're aware, within the DEQ budget, there is funding for buying sound meters. And Captain Williams sent over a letter that...
Does Representative Gustafson agree with the amendment?
I just wrote them up, Representative McGruder. I would think that he would, because there's certainly no additional burden.
Okay, Representative Bunn moves their adoption subject to Representative Gustafson's amendment. Is there any question, any objection to the amendments? Okay. Representative Frohnmeyer and Representative Marks object. They're
all right. I didn't object.
Okay, this Representative Frohnmeyer. Okay. Now, the... Are there any members of the committee that have additional amendments other than the amendments that we've delayed action on?
There's full funding in the state employee salary
package.
No. Representative Magruder, would you consider one other amendment?
What does that relate to?
It relates to tire standards.
No.
I'm willing.
As you know, 2:30.
Council has some technical amendments to the bill. Is there any objection to them? If not, they're ordered by unanimous consent.
Would you care to discuss the tire amendment?
Representative, is there anyone that wants to move the tire amendment?
The bill that went down on the floor the other day.
Is that the same bill?
This only had something like 14 votes on it.
No, it had considerably more than that.
Did it have more than that?
8. Okay, Representative Gilmore asked a question before we entertain your amendments. Would you ask counsel and or Mr. Pled?
Right now, under the present situation, we have a situation where lugs are prohibited, you know, like driving a cat down the highway, which is great. But under the definition of highways to include shoulders, Is that the question? Does that prohibit the cat from driving along the side of the road? That's something on the farm and transfer of a cat, you know, from one acreage to, you know, so maybe it's really silly. But I sure hate to find
change that. But it's not change that in the present law.
The problem is your problem is I question your definition of highway and roadway.
Well, I have a concern, Tom. We did change through changing the definition of highway up before. We had just prohibited lugs on the travel portion, and we say now that lugs are prohibited on the highway, we effectively exclude them from the shoulder also. And I wonder if
that was my concern. I just thought of that. A lot of farm people, or a lot of people, you know, drive their machinery. They don't put them on the road, but they take them alongside the road and keep off behind them. We're not writing in.
We haven't put anything in here that's going to preclude pulling a steel wheeled piece of farm machinery on the highway, have we? Oh, our problem is we're worried about roadway and highway and the definition there. Okay, now, what about, is it under present law, is it illegal to walk a cat down the highway if you put boards underneath it so the track doesn't touch the roadway? Don's trying to look up your question, and Ralph and Bud are trying to look up my question. My concern would be walking a cat across the highway, or walking a cat for a short distance down the highway. Okay, are there any other amendments? We've got these two questions.
I've got a question on that suspension. Allowing the judge to move the suspension.
And now, any vehicle equipped with any tire having on its periphery any block, stud, feet, bead, chain, or other protuberance of metal or other flexible material that projects beyond the tread or traction surface of the tire shall not be operated upon any highway, except vehicles actually engaged at the time of construction or repair of highways in the state. Traction engines moved upon dirt or unimproved roads, vehicles equipped with skid chains or reasonable portions for use in snow, ice, and whatnot. And then they allow studded tires at certain times of the year. Emergency vehicles. The owner of any or lessee of any land adjoining any highway may, without permit, move across or along the highway any tractor or implement of husbandry for the purpose of planting, cultivating, or harvesting any crop on condition that should be liable to the state of Oregon to benefit of the highway fund with respect to state highways for any injury done and to the county with respect to any damage done to county highways.
Okay, then that probably answers both questions.
Yes, I think it does. And we have not changed that law in any respect.
Okay. Dick, thank you. I have an amendment I'd like to propose. It's page 7A of the amendments. And it would say that, as it's written out there, it says the trial of any traffic infraction shall not commence until the expiration of 7 days from the date of arrest or citation for the traffic infraction. I'd like to add the words unless defendant waives the waiting period.
Any objection? None appearing. So ordered.
Now, that, to explain that, that has the effect that if a person goes into a small town and they've got a judge that they feel is not acting appropriately, they simply have an opportunity to delay trial, and I think it's effective to take care of some of the concerns that Teamsters validly had in their objections to the bill.
Okay. Now, Doug, would you go over the amendments that we held?
The first one that we need to discuss is the suggestion that on page 65, line 34, after the word conviction, we insert the language within a 5-year period to clearly state that if only a second or subsequent conviction within a 5-year period would result in a mandatory suspension for DUI conviction.
Yeah, well, that expresses what I think the intent has been all along.
Is there
some
objection to that amendment?
Yeah, that was the intent.
No objection. It's ordered by unanimous consent.
Motion to repeal section 267.
For example, that is a mandatory seatbelt requirement.
What page is that?
That's just that they have them, not that they wear them.
Page 164.
Call for the question.
What is the penalty for selling a car without a seatbelt?
Class B traffic infraction. $500. That's new.
New vehicle. You know, we pass more things to restrict the run. A seatbelt in a car, I can't help that one. The purpose of this is to have a comprehensive review of the motor vehicle statutes. I'm sure that they've modified some existing law in this statute. I'm sure they've repealed some existing law. And I'm suggesting that I think we've got no business requiring me to pay extra money to buy a car with seatbelts in it if I choose not to.
You can't buy a new car, you're not allowed a seatbelt.
That's because of federal law.
You might be able to.
So, so I can't imagine how anybody can object to taking that section out of Oregon law.
I think that's
just required
on school buses.
Are they going to require
school
buses in here too?
No,
no. Ms. Howard, do you have a comment?
There's an assessment with me to find a person convicted of driving under the influence of liquor who then is suspended on a second conviction for a period of time of 90 days in the 5-year period. No suspension first from what is the period for the second conviction? 5-year period.
1 year?
1 year. Person who refuses to take a breath test. Still having the constitutional presumption, at least, of innocence and the necessity on the second time around, at least, to be proven beyond reasonable doubt, that that suspension should be 180 days. I recognize the argument that you can probably get an occupational license. There may be the guy who is retired and doesn't require an occupational license. I don't know whether they're issued for the purpose of going to the grocery store or not. I think that the department would be stretching it if they did. Seems to me like it's just a longer period of suspension.
Okay. Is there anybody that objects to the amendment?
How about something in between the two?
Okay, Representative Marks.
I move 120 days.
Representative Marks moves 120. Anybody that objects to 120?
Just a compromise.
Representative Bunn objects to 120. Anyone else object to 120? Amendment is adopted with Representative Bunn objecting. Okay, next amendment.
Back to page 125, section
12. 125?
Right.
Page 125?
Right.
Okay, this relates to the rental, lease, or furnishing a motorcycle to someone without the verification he's got to put down. In lieu of suggesting an amendment to delete the entire thing.
So, just furnishing himself, I suppose.
Yeah.
What would be the liability to the personal injury case of a motorcycle dealer who leases or rents a motorcycle to someone who doesn't have a license?
Oh, I think you can make out a pretty good negligence case.
I don't see a single good argument for Billy.
Okay, let me try this one on you. And maybe it's just in view of the language that if I wanted to buy a motorcycle as a gift, heaven forbid I never would, to one of my sons for his birthday, and I was not licensed, I wanted to buy this thing. And told the guy I was going to give it to somebody. In other words, in order to buy one, even to give away as a gift, would I have to be endorsed?
Does it cover sale?
And I asked a question, does it cover sale? And I got an affirmative answer, I thought. It says lease.
Why don't we exclude sale and
then keep it? Yeah, I seriously doubt, although I had that idea back in this original statute, but I would seriously doubt they meant to include sale.
So you've got a problem when you put lease in there, too.
Whatever you're talking about.
No. The problem you're thinking of is a one-day lease.
Bonita has something.
I don't know about the language, and I do know that the president's hearing was put in law, and I think the intent that we were trying to get at was for somebody to borrow or loan a motorcycle to someone, and that person does not have an endorsement. Now, someone might probably interpret it if you couldn't be able to know that one.
All due deference to my friend from the motorcycle lobby, I'd like to repeat for you a little statement that appears in the office of an orthopedic surgeon, and it says, if you think that motorcycles are economical, efficient, and safe transportation for your son, why don't you buy him one for his last birthday?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got to be back in session right now.
Jim, I have one other technical amendment.
Okay, is there any objection to Representative Crowley?
My technical amendment is that notice of suspension will be by certified mail, not just ordinary mail.
That is a problem, yes.
And council being stuck.
Did we take care of that notice problem?
We took care of that last time.
Yeah, that's
that take care of your problem?
And refusal to accept it is the same.
No objection. It's ordered by unanimous consent.
Can we meet again after
session? Like to move the bill to the floor?
Not acceptable at this time.
Can we meet after the session on this bill?
I will not be there.
What are the other amendments that we've not acted upon? The mandatory seat belt one.
I don't think there's four of those. And you would trust them up there?
Did we do anything with the lease or sale of a motorcycle? I don't think we can.
Mm-hmm.
We can meet on the floor. We can meet on the floor, couldn't we?
As far as I'm concerned, you can, but I think there might be objections.
I think that's going to terminate.
What about the motorcycle thing? Are we not going to do anything in that area? I don't object to it. I do have two other amendments.
I agree with Bob. I personally think it's much more difficult to release.
Okay, then we'll close our discussion on that. Are you ready to move for the adequate notice and flag it in on the vehicle, stop it from standing?
If we do, can we get the bill out now?
We have the votes.
We've got the votes.
Okay, go ahead.
Tell us what it is.
Would you? Your motion is to substitute for, as an alternative to paragraph B of subsection 3 of section 95, which requires a visibility of a standing or parked vehicle on a highway, adequate notice
by unanimous consent, Representative Bunn moves Senate Bill 1 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Can you entertain a motion before that on the question of mandatory insurance?
Only if there's another bill that can be put into that's from the Senate.
Well, let's look for it quick.
Look through the Senate bill. Who's going to play on the insurance?
Well, relating to motor vehicle.
Can we amend the relating clause?
I've seen it done twice.
Yep.
No, I'll tell you. You'll have
you
to
can
get
amend the relating clause. Here.
You can amend the
bill as long as the general subject matter is the same.
Okay, I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll accept that. I'll call a special meeting and accept that motion. If you can find a bill that the amendment will be germane to, and you can get a declaratory judgment from the counsel, the president, the senate, that he'll rule it germane based on his memorandum on germaneness.
Here's one relating to disabled persons.
When will this bill be on the floor?
The motion to pass it out is going to be, what time do we have to send the report to the desk?
What time do you take that?
One half hour it has to be before. If you have it ready 1.5 hour before with all these amendments, it's going to be subject to having people read the bill before we report it to the desk. Well, I think you don't think you can get it. When can you have the amendments ready? Probably not even till tomorrow morning. Well, then we'll have to report to the desk the next day. Okay, that's fine.
Well, then we'll come up for what, Saturday? Lay over 2 days of amendment?
No, there'll be a suspension.
We're going to start suspending, I'm sure. Okay, Representative, is there anybody desirous of moving this bill to the floor? Representative Myers moved Senate Bill 1 to the floor. The due pass recommendation is amended.
That was the stipulation that we find a vehicle for the mandatory.
I'm willing, if you find an acceptable vehicle.
Well, Chair has conditionally accepted that amendment to delete the section where you're mandatory.
I have accepted that amendment. Assuming a bill suitable to the chair is bound to put it in.
Can it be recorded that there is no objection?
What?
What'd you say? There is no objection to that, Mr. Chair.
No objection. Subject to finding a bill acceptable to the chair.
Question.
Okay, is there any objection to the amendment to send Senate Bill 1 to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Representative Bunn and the chair vote no. The other four members vote aye. So ordered.
That's only happened once so far.
Cool my heels so you get a quorum, because I'd like to address at least enough members to try to persuade this bill out of it.
That's politics, Mr. Chairman. We've learned that much. We're
willing to accommodate you girls in any fashion.
Women, Mr. Chairman. You can accommodate her. She's a girl.
Oh, sweetie.
Was the committee referred to the committee yesterday? Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the assembly. First of all, it seems to me that what we're faced here with here is just simply an issue of principle, and quite frankly, it's that principle that gets me out of my own warm bed down here at 6:30 in the morning. The bill poses a rhetorical question of, I don't know what the number is, I assume that we're talking about the rate bill.
No, the rate bill has been signed by the governor.
Well, the related bill. That this bill poses the rhetorical question of, if you consent once, does that mean that you consent forever after? And you can analogize it to the situation where if my husband hits me in the shop, does that mean that I and consent to it, do I consent to the next assault? And it speaks most pointedly to treating rape as a crime of violence and not a crime of sex. yesterday, the questions were raised by two of the members of your committee that relate to the sanctity of marriage. And I would suggest to you that if this committee really is concerned with the sanctity of marriage, and I know that I am, and try to conduct my legislative affairs toward preserving the family and the sanctity of marriage, that why should you give status, if you're really concerned about the sanctity of marriage, why should you preserve or give some status to cohabitation without benefit of clergy? And that's essentially what that provision does. Now, Representative Bunn suggested in his argument, and he suggested this to me privately, that he's fearful that this would promote less than harmonious relationships between people and be dragging family fights into court. And I could only say to that that presently, in order for this issue to be raised, it has to already be in court. And you have the situation where two people are living in a commune or some sort of relationship where they're not married and they're not sleeping together. Assume that there is a brutal rape under those circumstances, and the woman charges the male with rape, then immediately he's given a prima facie defense of cohabitation, because all he has to do is go in to drink, say, well, we're all living together in this house, and you raise the inference that by the mere fact of living in the same house, that they are cohabitating. So the burden, once again, is put on the woman. If it seems to me that where the situation where the defense would arise, that it's still a jury question about the cohabitation, and if you remove this defense, you're still leaving it to the jury to decide in their own minds whether or not she had consented. There just isn't any valid reason to have this defense on the books. It's still a jury question. It's simply a matter of principle. It's treating rape as a crime of violence, and I'd just like to reiterate that intellectually, and as far as the legal theory is concerned, that you simply cannot assume that consent once is consent thereafter, and that's about all I have to say about it.
Question to Representative Paulus.
Yeah. If somebody raises this defense, couldn't they charge them with battery anyway? The fact that you were attacked? That way it makes it, not a non-sexual act, in effect. There's two parts to a rape that I see. One is kind of an assault, the other is a sexual act. Now, at least, couldn't the woman charge them with battery?
But if the real crime was rape, why should you ask the woman to go around the legal corner? If the crime is rape, why are you asking her to bring a charge on some other criminal definition? What is the danger? That's what I'd like to present the committee as. What is the danger that's presented to society or relationships between men and women by removing this as a defense? There is none. For instance, if you and I were living without benefit of clergy, either sleeping together or not sleeping together, but still living in the same house, and I charged you with rape, the specter that's been raised on the floor by the gentleman is that this would give me an opportunity, a better legal standing, to harass you and claim rape, cry wolf, when in fact it has not happened. And it's still a jury question. The jury's going to look at you and me and decide which one of us they want to believe and view the circumstances of our living. But the danger in leaving it on the statute is this. If you do commit a brutal rape, an act of violence against me or someone else that's sharing the same house, and we had not been cohabitating together, and it is a legitimate complaint on my part, then all you have to do is come in and raise this defense, and I'm left out there hanging. It's simply not equal justice. It doesn't give us an equal footing for the court system. I presume guilty from
I guess I start with
questions. Representative Marks.
I start with the assumption that if they actually are cohabitating, that there isn't as much psychological damage incurred by the rape. At least,
I
think I start with
true,
that, which may not always be true.
I don't think that's true. I think that psychological damage done to a woman is greater if she's raped by someone that she knows than by a stranger.
Additional questions? None appearing. Thank you, Representative Paulus. Anyone else wishing to testify on this measure? Chairman Smith?
Move the bill. I follow.
Do you object to those amendments, Representative Paulus?
Mr. Chairman, can I make just a little teeny statement for the record?
Certainly.
All right. I want to point out that the statement that I made yesterday on the House floor is corroborated by the commentary to the criminal code, which points out that adding this cohabitation changes the common law. And it says Section 107, which this is, changes the common law to the extent that it allows the spouse relationship to protect parties who are not in fact legally married. So my point is that if we're concerned about protecting the common law didn't have very much concern about the relationship of cohabitation, and I don't see why we should change it. I think that the repealing the statute restores the common law.
In our record as the intent of the criminal code revision.
But this is not the same bill, Mr. Chairman, that was on the floor of the House yesterday.
No, we're talking the question that we asked today about those amendments.
I don't know. I'd like to have time to think about it.
We'd like to have you take some time and
The one that we're concerned about does not speak to married people. And if you really want to preserve the sanctity of marriage, then why do you want to dignify living together by leaving this defense on the book?
Many understand. Additional testimony, Mr. Smith.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'd just like to point out or suggest to the committee a couple of things that might ease the concern over this bill. First, however, I would like to respond to the suggestion that somehow a woman is less injured if she is raped by someone with whom she has been living. I think the common sense as well as statistical evidence would suggest that you are liable to be more injured when someone in whom you have put some trust violates your privacy in so intensely personal way if you're involved in rape than if it happens from a complete stranger. But in the real practical world, I would be willing to bet that in the state of Oregon, which there are 2,200,000 people, the passage of this bill would not produce 10 final arguments before a jury in the next 10 years. In those cases where they're in those 8 or 9, I would submit that those cases really ought to be able to be finally argued. But if you actually had a case which was sufficiently egregious that a district attorney was willing to take it to a grand jury and a grand jury were willing to indict, that it should not have a roadblock in front of it of this really rather spurious defense. Because as a practical matter, DA learns very early that getting a woman to complain against a man with whom she is living and to stick with the complaint is almost impossible. And I after I'd been a DA for a year, I established a rule in my office that any woman who was living with a man who came in and had been beat up in any fashion and wanted to file a complaint, I required her to wait 5 days, which 5 days had to include a weekend, before she could sign the complaint. And the reason I did that is that for the first year, I had just automatically let the complaint be signed, and without one single exception, that woman had been back within 5 days saying, I won't do it, got to dismiss the complaint. So we always went through the exercise, we filed a complaint, and 3 or 4 days later, we dismissed it. After the first year, I departed from that once. A woman came in, and she had nearly lost an eye. She was just the worst-looking mess you ever saw. And I thought, I'm not going to make this poor woman come clear up back up from Hermiston again to do this. She obviously is going to stick with it. Nobody can beat up this family and change their mind, and so I filed it. 6 days later, she was in crying and weeping and screaming and hollering that I was going to have to dismiss that complaint. And we had to dismiss the complaint in the case of that kind. You're stuck with it. So I stuck to my rule with greater firmness. About 16 months later, I departed from my conviction once again that you'd always have that waiting period to make sure that the person intended to follow through, because a woman who was living with a man, had been living as husband and wife for 7 years, although never formally married, had been mishandled by her to the extent he accusing her wrongfully, apparently, of infidelity, had, after beating her up, inserted his hand into her vagina and pulled out a piece of her uterus. And I figured this one, I didn't have to worry about her changing her mind. And I also figured I didn't have to be concerned because this was aggravated assault, and therefore we could treat it as a felony, not a misdemeanor. And we didn't need her as a complaining witness. All we needed her was a testifying witness. Or even if she did get a little squeamish, we'd still be able to prosecute the case. That case was finally dismissed because she was promising that she was going to perjure herself and swear that it had never happened, despite the hospital records and all the rest and the bloody panties and all the other evidence. She was going to swear that it never happened, and there's no question we could not have obtained a conviction. So in the practical world, I'm not concerned about anybody being unduly harassed. And I submit to the committee that if there is a case where a woman has been raped and she is willing to stick to it, there's going to be minuscule in number, but that case ought to go to trial. That case ought to go to the jury. We should remember that the prosecution is still going to have to prove that that rape occurred only because that woman was in actual, reasonable fear of death or serious physical injury. A serious physical injury is described in the statute. It's a very heavy burden to establish. It's a particularly heavy burden to convince the jury that that could be the case when she had been living with him. When there's a case that strong, I think you ought to encourage it and let it happen.
Any questions? Not. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Next witness. Anyone else interested in this bill?
Senate Bill 436 takes no legal rights away from the accused action. Okay, I'm Meg Graves. I've been lobbying on all the rape legislation. It takes no legal rights away from anyone. It does give legal rights to the victim. I would like to ask the committee, since when are we rationing out equal protection? By defeating Senate Bill 436, this legislature is approving of rape under some circumstances and not in others. Rape is an ugly, violent, demeaning crime. We are talking about a crime that is committed against half of our population, and that 50% should receive legal protection when a crime is committed against them, regardless of its nature. The role of the DA's office and the police is to investigate thoroughly all rape cases. The role of the court system is to determine the guilt. By simple cohabitation, no one should be excluded from protection of the law. It is not a valid defense.
Okay, questions? Not. Thank you. Next witness. Any additional witnesses?
I'm Ann Kelly. This is my daughter, Kate Feeney. I'm the lobbyist for all of the women's bills in this legislature, and I have not had occasion to speak about the rape issue before this committee because we had so many lawyers and all kinds of issues. But at this point, I just couldn't hold back from adding a few words of amazement at what happened yesterday and hope that you'll reconsider this bill and send it back to the floor for vote. I just think there are a couple of things that one ought to envision when considering the cohabitation situation. One is the kind of case where cohabitation can be a very vague relationship between a man and a woman. A man perhaps has moved into a woman's apartment in a moment of enthusiasm or whatever, and perhaps the relationship wanes very fast, but the threat of rape can remain, and the threat against her can remain there, and he can quietly insinuate that he will rape her if she does anything to throw him out of the apartment. She has no legal way of divorcing him or getting rid of him or of separating them, stopping the situation, and he can, by sheer force of personality, stay there for months and take advantage of her. And it's very little he can do to stop this kind of situation. But the other kinds of situations that I think are growing and have been mentioned is the fact that students living together in college towns, and this is more and more frequent, that a group of five or six young people will gather together and share the expense of a house. Whether this is moral or not is certainly to be debated, but nevertheless they're considered by the law to be cohabitating as man and wife, because there's very little other assumption the law can legally make as to what their intent in living together. And if you know what college situations are like, easily the last 2 months or so of a college year, maybe somebody moves out and a young man is offers to move in, and the group says okay, nobody really knows him, just to help pick up the rent the last month or so. This man is hardly known by the others in the house, and he can rape with impunity. And I understand it's happened. I'm sorry that we did not work hard enough to get actual cases here to speak to you of married women and of cohabitating women in a situation of the kind of threat, kind of feeling that they would feel about rape. And I think that perhaps this is necessary to have quite married. That's right, it's very difficult to find cases because nobody can even bring charges initially. But I think we could certainly find them if you were interested to go out.
Okay, any questions? Next witness. Anyone else?
Mr. Chairman, I'm one of those people about whom we were just talking. I live in a co-op, seven people. It's certainly not a part of my lease, consent to any form of sexuality. But by the definition of the law, I would have to prove that in a court if I got raped. But it's not exactly intellectual to me. I think these kinds of situations, because of the cost of housing, are on the increase, not just in college towns and not just among college people. And I really think this committee ought to seriously think about whether they wish to put that kind of sanction on alternative housing arrangements where the burden of proof would have the other woman inevitably. It's my hope that this committee will send this bill back out on the floor and that those arguments can be undermined.
Representative Bunn.
For purposes of this issue, do you see any distinction between seven people in a condo and a man and a woman who move in together for purposes of a marriage relationship without a marriage certificate?
I do see a distinction, yes. But in my mind, if they move in together for purposes of living together in a marriage-like situation, to me, there's a very large difference between marriage and living together. Usually it's viewed as probationary, and I think that automatic consent to sexuality is not always implied. And what's more, although the consent might be there for lovemaking, I don't think it's automatically there for rape. I think assault is a very different sort of thing, and if you just happen to use, and I don't mean to be flip about this, you happen to use that particular blunt weapon, it does not change the fact that it's assault. And I think where the argument comes in that even within a marriage-like situation, it is not the same.
Yeah, just a statement quickly for the record. I'm not willing to repeal this law for probationary marriage, but I am willing to do it as a way to distinguish the condoms. Very strongly opposed to repealing it in what has come to be the method of marriage in our society.
Okay, any additional questions or statements?
I've given you that. I guess the thing is, it was obvious after reading that, the reason it was put in was that they wanted to afford the same protection to a man and wife woman living together as it is a man and woman who are legally married. Now, I guess,
what should that be Okay, we can't get argumentative this morning.
Okay, just one further comment that I wanted, you know, I would be interested in seeing cases of very brutal, because of this statute, non-rape, but what would be rape if we repealed this law, so I can see the abuses we're talking about, because I don't believe they exist. I believe there may be questions of whether or not there was consent, but I don't think there are brutal rapes between people that are married.
I can give you cases.
Okay, I'll be interested.
Okay, we're not, I have order in the committee. We're not getting argumentative this morning about a bill of this, these causes and lessons.
I'm just trying to sort this out. Do you have any quarrel with the common law rule that a husband cannot be guilty? I mean, cannot be charged with rape against his wife?
Legally married.
Yeah, legally married.
No, I agree with your comment yesterday, that, you know, the better solution would be divorce, if that's it. But I think that this lends dignity to exactly the situation that Stan Bunny presented, that we cannot separate the communes. For instance, if the seven of us are living together, why in the world should there be a statute on the books to the
okay, Representative, we can't get one more question, Representative.
You know, after reading that, the rationale of why they put it in, it wasn't, the reason was, is that they wanted to protect people who were cohabiting together, but weren't
living
together.
They lived together 20 years and
that's
they
right.
had established marriage. That is not existing
okay, so your position is that that isn't, you think that the commune situation and
there isn't any way you can find that because you define, you know, you make a distinction between legal marriage and common law.
You're not protecting anybody. That's a misnomer. That's complete misuse of the word protect.
Okay,
gentlemen. I can't be
now, Representative Paulus, do you support an amendment to this bill? Are you prepared to support the bill for an amendment to stop to it?
Not the one that repeals
Dunn's
bill, no.
Okay, Representative Paulus is not prepared to support that amendment. Any additional witnesses? Not the hearing on House and Senate Bill 436 is closed. So the record will be clear. Representative Frohnmayer moves House Bill 2264 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. This is against passenger law. Is there any objection to that?
Objection.
Representative Bunn objects. Motion is ordered. You'll have to take the roll on that motion.
Would you take a motion now on 436?
No. Not on the motion. It's not on our agenda this morning. Hearing. Waiting for Representative Bunn to see if he has the answer to his question.
Okay.
436 is my.
Lower.
Yeah. Was that my motion?
No, you're looking at just passenger.
Yeah, I'm trying to
enforce it. Six.
We'll just move to get the passenger back down.
Oh, we had a meeting the other day, as you remember, and we cast that out, but I just wanted to set the record clear while we had our taking order in business. Now, there's a suggest amendment. What bill did you find yesterday? There was a change in the question of your maintenance on that bill. 703 or 740 or something on the insurance
thing.
Yeah, I don't think there's any problem. What was the bill you had? Let's take a look at that bill.
We'll use that.
$324 is the bill.
That's close enough.
Well, I don't think there's any problem about the Germaine
that's
fine. Bill. Sponsored by the Committee on Transportation with the request of Motor Vehicles Division of the Parks and Transportation. Which are all. Okay, no objection. Representative Myers moves to amend the mandatory insurance requirements to this bill. It's ordered by unanimous consent. Representative Myers moves the amended bill to the floor. Do pass recommendation. It's ordered by unanimous consent.
We got that juvenile bill.
75.
They brought some in and put on that Jim Crest bill.
I think I love that. Is that the one on
Can we just take some time to run through those?
Yeah, look.
Dan coming back, I want to ask.
It's on confidentiality of school counselors. That's not on the agenda.
Tell me the rationale behind that.
The rationale behind that is that with a marriage relationship, there are about five different rationales among them, are based on the technical unity of man and wife, the common law, which is a legal fiction. Another one of them is, you know, don't disturb the domestic hearth by taking things to the criminal court. Third is, more modern women, you can always get divorced. Fourth is, essentially, that it's inappropriate in a relationship at that time. Bring criminal penalties into it when there are other businesses.
Well, here's the problem I have. It's obvious after reading the note to that, is it isn't protection. It's the idea that they wanted to take the same rationale to a legally consummated marriage and extend it to two people who were cohabiting together, since we don't have it, but it's common law, because the same family unit exists.
No, I suggest that the comments can be thought through.
Well,
the reason that we have marriage is so that there be a different relationship than shacking up.
Okay.
Right now the DA will say, well, they're cohabiting.
So that's the rationale you say, is the fact that a man and woman cohabiting together, not legally married, is not the same relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it's legally not the same. There is a difference between cohabiting and marriage.
Now,
that's
what,
why we have laws about marriage.
The whole thing that's not pointed out here, the fact that there have been few prosecutions or anything else is all irrelevant. It's a question of harassment. If Representative Kulongoski is cohabiting with someone, and that party happens to get mad at him and goes to the district attorney and says he raped me, the district attorney is now going to say, forget it. Okay? We repeal this law, the district attorney is going to say, well, you can maybe prosecute.
You know, the judge say, come into the next room and I'll give you a polygraph test just like I give any other complainant in a rape case. No.
Okay. Why should an unmarried man living with another, with a woman, be any more protected from harassment, quote unquote, than just any John Doe who rapes a woman? If he's not married to her,
they're living together, it's different, Representative Myers.
I mean, the funny thing is that very act of living together was a felony until recently. Was it fornication? We made that a crime.
Okay. Why are we additional testimony regarding this bill?
Okay. I'm satisfied because I see the particular point that you're making for the first time today.
Chairman, I'd like to add another thing if I may. I think there was a perception on the floor yesterday that this bill opened the door to rape charges as between married people, which is not the exchange between Mr. Cass and Mr. Cass. You know, she was asking about the distinction between she couldn't get it from a marital context. I think there are a lot of members who perceive that this bill doesn't do. Jack's husband in the rape charges by their wives.
Representative Myers, from the answer that I gave Representative Katz, there is no way that I can be said to have misled the Senate.
No, no, no. I didn't think you misled me.
Okay. We've got some matters that we can discuss. What about Senate Bill 580?
Members of the committee, let me think about this.
still is not my district.
What's that bill that, that you've all filled with, they don't have any amendments?
That's the body for attendance.
Yeah, attention rate.
What about 135 and 137? We had a hearing on 135 and 137.
I got the impression that this made it easier to hold it to,
73?
Yeah, rather than higher. Is it possible?
That is what I was confused.
I think it's going in the other way.
We won't recall the bill, but I won't send it to the desk until I receive approval from Representative Blumgoss.
Okay.
It's Senator Roberts' bill, and she's very interested in the bill.
Which one, Mary Wendy or?
161, Senator Mary Roberts. And Representative Bunn was against the bill, and I passed it out subject to his approval. Representative Bunn then talked to Mr. Thim of the Children's Services Division, and there was an agreement that Mr. Thim would come before the committee and put the legislative intent in the bill. We then after Representative Bunn reached this decision, Representative Cronemeyer, Blumgoss became concerned about it, so we're holding the bill subject to solving their concerns if there's no objection to that.
Could I pick up SB1 just a moment? I've visited with the speaker, and his personal concern about 0.12 level, I don't mean in opposition, he's concerned about lowering it to 0.10, indicates personal opposition to the bill if it were in that form. It stands in the way for me to chat about this more always. Now, one alternative approach.
Lowering it to 0.10?
Huh? One alternative approach that I broached with him was 0.08 sputable, 0.12 conclusive, which tightens present law considerably.
I mean, that was talked about and suggested in the committee when the original thing came up. The figures don't mean anything to me. I don't care if it's 0.08 or 0.12. The significant factor of it, that whole section, is the disputable versus the conclusive presumption. That's the heart of it, as far as I'm concerned. Because I want the opportunity to be able to come in there, personally, as an attorney, and if the guy blew a 0.08, to be able to show that even though that's what the blood alcohol content was, that is driving and everything else, if he wasn't under, there was no reason to charge him with it.
You can't do that over 0.15 now, though.
I know, yes, and that's the significance of when it was a 0.08, was it was conclusive.
Well, I'm talking about 0.08.
I'm talking about 0.10 now, if you just solved by the concrete.
Now,
they're going to be very
clearly amenable. It will not be a minority report.
Is it not me?
Would the chair be amenable to thumbing through our current bills?
There's some good bills in here.
We don't have any problem with it. We got a whole bunch.
Yeah, there's some good ones in here.
I
okay, or do you have any bills you're interested in, Representative Myers?
Yeah, I'll start, can I?
Well,
Senate Bill 699.
It's been passed and approved by the committee. If you want to reconsider.
No, keep it going.
Why don't we just start at the front?
Well, that's what I was doing. First bill is Senate Bill 75. I think we need to look at this bill. There has been a request. Oh, I guess 64 is not done. 75.
I'm not persuaded that bill is needed yet.
Senate Bill 75? Oh, I think it is.
We change the burden.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
You think change
encourages Senate Bill 134. Encourages person likely to become unconscious or incoherent to wear identification cards or devices containing.
Hearing to tomorrow. Okay. How about, did we send out 64?
No.
Well, this afternoon.
We didn't?
Permits fingerprinting and photographing of certain children taken into custody for purposes of child abuse.
Now, we were going to move in a bunch of amendments, and there was objection to that.
What about 135?
Oh, Doug, I haven't gotten there yet. I was going back to 64.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Doug.
I would move 64 unamended to the floor.
No.
I don't
agree
with
that. Okay, then we're to 134.
135.
What did we do with 134?
Okay,
135. Permits any person to disclaim and hold or impart any property interest received or to be received under non-testamentary instrument. Prescribes procedures for such disclaimers.
This is the Uniform Disclaimer of Instruments Law.
Go to the floor.
Jim Myers moves Senate Bill 135.
A two-sentence explanation of what it does. I'd just like to know.
We'll vote for any connection. No objection. Now, will you explain any questions that Representative Marks has?
Well, disclaimer. You may, for tax reasons, not want to get property that's given to you.
Oh,
and yet, under the common law, once it was vested and you take the delivery, that was it, and you were stuck with it. This gives you a period of time and a uniform procedure by which you can disclaim yourself.
No.
What would be a reason not to take it?
Tax-wise.
Tax.
So you want
but
to wait?
You know, suppose they give you a piece of property, the monthly installments of which are $450 a month, and you're on welfare. You can't pay. You can't pay the interest. You know, there are all kinds of reasons why I'm not carrying the obligations you don't want.
Okay, Senate Bill
137.
This is part of the same thing.
Stands right, yes. Any objection to 137? If not, Tim Myers was the first order. 145.
Now, we put a bill of this nature out, didn't we now?
145.
Aren't you going to put 142 up?
Terminates designation of a divorced spouse as beneficiary.
Hey, how come you're not going to put 142 up?
Because it was at the wrong place on the list to begin with. No.
I remember that a bill we had at the very beginning, and we were waiting for this bill to come over from the Senate because of the fact that
Senate Bill 145 is now before terminates designation of a divorced spouse as beneficiary of insurance or other death benefits across the degree of property settlement agreement provides otherwise.
I just think that's something.
We had a hearing on that.
There's a problem with it because there was a question raised as to the time and place in which this
like
applies, whether it applies to the time of the divorce decree, etc.
Okay.
I don't think it's a good idea.
I don't think it's a good idea.
Okay, now Senate Bill 149.
186.
149.
186.
What'd you do with 186, Dick?
Those bills will have to have further study.
I have a feeling that things are
are about probate around here, Mr. Chairman. I'm doing so good.
What? It seems like it could be a probate court, too.
Well, I think we've got, I think Oregon has very enlightened attitude.
I'm not in favor of 191. I just got the state of expressions. Special interest.
Now then, we'll have to move to 213.
If the Court of Appeals
creates county enforcement account to consist of civil penalty monies relating to unlawful trade practices. Right, funds?
Yeah.
Directs excess funds.
Are we going to have a hearing on? I know it is. What bill are we on now, Mr. Chairman?
213.
213.
Where do the monies from this?
It's not David, it isn't.
Court of Appeals, not in the district. Anybody know anything about 213?
We're skipping 229?
It's voted out, that's fine. I've got a list of the ones that are here, so maybe I can call them out.
What's the next one?
324.
That's taken care of in SB1.
Would it be tabled?
224.
No, that's
voted
the
stability of the
grant.
Well, that's the one you're using.
Yeah.
Forget that.
What, 324?
387.
You've got it. I'm sorry. I lost track.
We're going to run into the Germanus problem on that.
No. Okay. Why were we running into a Germanus problem?
Maybe not.
Germanus is the sign of the body.
Let's go.
And it's German by the chair. 434. 469.
What about 387?
The chairman wants, or the sponsor wants to hold that bill.
387. How come?
Dick, you took 425 out. Will you sign the committee report on it?
I'll 469. I do not see how we can start awarding reasonable attorney's fees to people unless you do it on a uniform basis, and the intent of the committee was to kill my bill to allow it to be done on a uniform basis.
I think there's a difference between doing it selectively. You know, we've heard arguments about policy considerations against making them available on every kind of action that's suitable for that consideration.
Is there any other action that you're entitled to receive a reasonable fee for expert witnesses? I don't think there's any other action I know of.
Chairman, if I could ask you to take another look at 469 for just a moment. We're not creating a new kind of action in which attorney's fees are awarded. They're now recoverable. We're just increasing the amount of the claim.
Yeah, but it isn't an attorney fee provision. It's a fee awarded to a person
expert
in these actions that have to call expert witnesses. They're product liability cases.
You are expanding the valid claim of the kind of case within which the fee may be awarded, but you are also permitting compensation of expert witnesses, which is very important. It could represent a tremendous outlay without any reimbursement.
Can we move that one out?
Not bad.
Why did you get involved in it?
Well,
you want.
The committee didn't.
The committee treasurer wanted it.
Well, why didn't tell us?
Well, no problem. He's got no strong feelings going one way or another. He just, politically, it's a bad issue. He's getting stuck into it, so he agreed to let it.
If you move it back, no problem.
Take that out.
Cool, calm.
Nick, would you accept the motion?
Yeah. You mother.
Then my committee.
Move Senate Bill 460 committee for the disaster.
Any objection?
Chair objection.
What do we do?
Okay.
469.
Four seven seven.
Is this designed to correct that bill law so that?
Yeah.
That it has to send a committee for, I'm moving forward to that.
Just a minute. I think it was designed to do that, but now if you read it in its present context, a defendant arrested for a major traffic offense would have the entire bail provision applied to him.
That's what
I mean. Which means he would not be able to get out unless he posted security amount. The individual arrested for a minor traffic offense have the recog and conditional release provisions apply, and could be released upon bail. The security amount provisions would not apply.
Maybe we ought to
major traffic offenses. What
yeah.
is it now?
Okay, I withdraw my motion.
Does bail apply, or
can we have
security
tell us about that?
Present law, bail
one.
Applies to major traffic
offenses.
Just oh, out bail it.
We passed out 501.
This makes it so it doesn't.
That's right.
But the security release does. Well, that's okay.
What do we schedule out for the bail?
Nick, where are we now? 581?
We had a hearing on that and it was decided, I think, there was some problems.
Yeah.
Okay. 597, makes consent to adopt not required in a prison parent sentence.
By the
was not less than 5 years. This says if you're in prison for 5 years, they don't have to get your consent or your kid's doctor.
No.
No.
The other way around, if you're in prison for more than 3 years, they don't have to get your consent.
Jesus. I didn't know that.
This actually tightens the protection for the incarcerated parent.
Yeah, I would
give him more protection, yes.
To give him consent.
Although
it will
bar.
Hold
just
that bill till we get our criminal rights package this afternoon.
Six.
Put that bill on our agenda this afternoon. Okay, 623. That's correct.
Okay, that
we didn't pass it out.
No, no. Okay.
I want you to look.
660.
Exempts
class actions and actions providing attorney's fees in exclusive jurisdiction of small claims department of district and justice court.
Oh, all right. Now, this was re-referred at my suggestion because of what seemed to me. Can we take just a minute to on this? I'll see if I can figure out again what was bothering you.
There's a printer error.
I know where it's
only. In subsection 2.
It's the word only.
That's a printer error and it should not appear
does
there.
Does not exceed such action may be included.
All right, what we've got is we've got two inconsistent exclusive jurisdiction sentences following one another.
The word only is not supposed to be there. Printer error. The word was taken out of the Senate amendment, but the printer in the first two lines. If you look
right,
at the next page.
Line 13, delete only.
Yes, if you look at the next page.
Where the amount claimed does not exceed $500, such actions may be commenced and prosecuted
in the small claims department.
All right, so it's a current jurisdictional section.
Okay, take it out and pass it out.
Larry Kirkpatrick came back and said, he's a university.
Oh, I know.
Talking about and you probably haven't heard anything. It's designed to correct an oversight in the
Oh, I have no problem with the bill. It's just that it came before.
Back to the floor.
It didn't make any sense.
Okay.
Those two sentences are mutually contradictory.
Some additional amendments have been presented to the bill. If you want to take time to look at it now.
Okay, what do they do?
Tell us what they do.
Can you not?
I think you have to call them.
Okay. Put this on our agenda. 699, we've asked for.
Did we pass 699 on?
Yep.
What?
Okay.
Okay, 714.
How about 703? Now that's the one they presented amendments to.
Yep.
Dick, 714 is going to save somebody a lot of grief.
714 is not scheduled for hearing. If you want a hearing, I'll put it on next Monday.
This is all right.
You want to take a motion of 33?
33 is okay.
No.
Yeah? Why not?
Motion not accepted. 753.
Are we going to send 733 out finally?
I suppose if there's four votes, we send any bill out.
Yeah.
When did that rule go into effect?
Yeah. 753.
You know, Hardy, does that change the existing law?
I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah, you know what it is that under the existing law, once an attorney appears, I mean, once the person gets an attorney, you can serve everything on his attorney or record.
And this requires service on the individual defendant.
On all the motions and everything.
That's crazy. I don't know why not.
Well, the problem that I have with that is the fact that if your client, like, they're not always diligent, he gets the motion and you don't ever know about it.
Well, no, I don't. No, surely they mean, this does not mean concurrent notice to the defendant on the attorney.
Well, the thing
maybe
is,
we ought to set that down for a hearing.
There's no requirement that you serve the attorney. That's the problem.
I think there's an intent that service on the defendant means service on his attorney, but we better clarify.
No, I don't think that's what he wants.
Carson and ask
him
about
Wally.
Ethically, it's improper for me to send something, I think, to a client directly when he's represented by a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the nature of service?
Okay, let's find out from him.
If you look at what the bill originally was and what it was expanded to.
Okay, 800, we'll have to wait on, I guess.
Are these bills that become in the
how about 770? Did we send it
out? That's the
Okay, 804. Authorizes person licensed or certified by health-related licensing board in attendance at birth, or if birth not so attended, neither parents can file certificate. Any person 18 years of age or older in attendance at birth can prepare birth certificate. Permits exemption from filing record of certain births with local registrar upon request of mother.
Did this bill have a hearing?
Yes.
Was there opposition?
529, we had a work session. Was there any opposition?
Not that I recall, but this an individual from Senator Mary Roberts' office.
Why is the bill needed to be removed?
Let's just hold that.
Looks
yeah.
Like it would make it easier to prepare a valid birth certificate.
No.
I think some of the situations, some of the home deliveries,
8:53.
You don't want 8:27?
Stuff is there.
No.
8:53.
Excuse me.
8:53 to me.
Did we pass a bad bill?
Did we pass out 800?
No.
No.
This 8:53.
Sit on this.
Okay.
Yeah. 10:11. What about the?
We passed 10:11 down.
Okay.
What about that? 10:11. We can't do this afternoon.
Okay.
We didn't pass it down.
Do you have a list of the bills that are on this afternoon?
Yep.
Do you have enough for every member?
Did we pass it as is? Did we pass it as is?
Yeah.
Oh, 10:11 is a terrible bill.
You got the eighth grocery store we did yesterday. The other one is
10:11.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just limited to traffic.
No, it's not. Unless you amended it.
No. Look at the A and Gross.
I don't have
first time I looked. First time I looked at it, I didn't have the A and Gross. It was just everything.
A and
Gross
version. Yeah, see, it's only. Yeah. I don't have A, but I know what it is.
There, I've got it. Okay, now I'd ask that you. We're just.
Does it change present law?
We're going to.
Well, see, there's a court case that recently came down.
If you're worried about the bill, why don't you discuss it after the meeting?
The bill is by the insurance company.
10:14 is the major item of business on our agenda. Afternoon.
Hey, could you hold on to 10:11 and get it before the full committee?
No, let's send that sucker up there. It's already in the
Senate. Is there anybody that wishes
to? No, it isn't. It's not the way it is.
Yeah, I think we ought to. Anybody that wishes to reconsider the action on Senate Bill 1011?
Yeah, I kind of do now that I've heard these.
Sen Myers, what's your position?
I'd like to hold it back until we can look at it.
I'd take him.
Representative Myers.
All right.
Senator Myers moves reconsideration as ordered with the chair and Representative Bunn objecting. 10:14, I'd ask all of you to review that bill and 2512 as amended.
Is this the mandatory life sentence bill?
That's right. These will be the major areas of two major bills. Then in addition, we have 134, ID cards for unconscious and incoherent prone persons. 770 relating to artificial insemination. 827 setting aside conviction. 889 city prosecuting for violation of city charter. And 1013 Supreme Court suspension of judges. And then we'll look at 610, 660,
730.
And we'll meet 1/2 hour after the recess. And if you can be here promptly, then we'll try and act on all these measures right then.
If the guy forfeits the bail,
return the bail.
I'll come to order. The clerk will take note of those present. The balance are excused. Special Subcommittee on Criminal Rights is now in session. We're considering Senate Bill 1014, which, as you recall, was amended yesterday to include all the provisions of amended House Bill 2512.
I don't think there was enough votes for that discussion.
The motion was accepted by unanimous consent.
No, I insist, Mr. Chairman, that at least this one vote protested before.
People were ruling this chair?
What?
People were ruling this chair?
We only got three votes.
Representative Marks appeals the ruling of the chair. Four votes to appeal the ruling.
Yes.
I can't deal with that.
That chooses to join Representative Myers.
Yeah.
Okay. So in my Representative Myers, motion overruled.
I have a feeling, Mr.
Additional
Chairman.
Discussion on Senate Bill 1014.
I have to understand what the effect of the amendment is.
Bring back the death penalty.
Well, no, it's not, because it's amended into a mandatory life sentence bill. What does he get under this bill?
What?
What does he get under this bill?
What does a convicted murderer get under this bill? Does after get sentenced to mandatory life and 3 year review?
Well, if the death penalty is not imposed, then they'll have a mandatory life sentence.
That's not the effect of amending the bill in, though. That's the technical matter.
That's the effect.
Well, a serious question.
I don't think
a serious question. Has this bill been amended to include the death penalty? That is the bill before us now.
The bill before us, and we're now discussing the bill. And
I don't think you had enough votes to.
Any say that issue's been decided?
No, I don't think that issue's been fully decided.
Require a roll
issue has been decided. In that way, we're not in full committee session at this time. Do you have suggestions to make this bill a little bit better in St. Myers?
I would move to delete the amendment. Go back to the original bill.
Do you have additional suggestions before we act on the bill?
Principal question I'm still wrestling with is whether or not the power that's vested in the court here should be a power that's been in the parole board. The argument is that that's one of the issues I think we need to talk out of committee.
Let's discuss that issue.
If we're seriously talking about sending a bill out with the death penalty,
well, I suppose this bill is amended with the death penalty.
Purposes of discussion, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the amendment.
Senator Meyer, actually, I don't think in the subcommittee it's necessarily appropriate. I think probably the appropriate thing for us to do in the subcommittee is to recommend to the full committee the amendments that we choose to make. Wouldn't that be more appropriate for us?
Let me ask.
Senator Meyer has suggested that we adopt the amendments, which will designate as the Kurandowski amendments.
Can I ask a question about them now that we've adopted them?
Will there be any objection to their adoption of the full committee meets?
Let's hear the discussion.
Yeah, if you have a contested case under the Administrative Procedures Act, there's no provision in the APA for who has the burden of proof in a contested case hearing. So it's a little unclear to me what the contested case would be all about and who would have the burden going forward. Does the parole board have the burden of showing that he's not rehabilitatable, or would the prisoner have the burden of showing that he is rehabilitatable?
I hope the prisoner would have the burden to show that he was rehabilitatable.
Would you assume that the prisoner would have a right to counsel in this situation?
Everyone should have a right to counsel.
candidate's proof in a contested case is reliable, probative, and substantial evidence, which is not even a preponderance of an evidence. So it makes a difference who has the burden of persuasion versus going forward, because practically any decision the agency comes up with will be justifiable on the basis of the whole record somehow. So I think that the bill would have to be further amended one way or the other. I don't think the prisoner has the burden or the board has the burden, but I don't think that that's just in this way. Well, it seems to me if the bill the way the bill is designed, it wouldn't make any sense for anyone other than the prisoner to have the burden of showing his situation. But that doesn't mean I want to proceed very much farther with this set of amendments. Have you seen the so-called Kulondoski amendments?
No, I
haven't. Okay. Did you hear what it does? It would basically take it away from the courts, give it to the parole board, would eliminate the writ of habeas corpus, and would make it a contested case under the APA.
I think it needs to be an improvement.
Now, this is going to put us right back to the present system without it turning them out.
It doesn't turn them out at all. All it does is this is a contested case to determine whether or not there's a change of status as far as rehabilitation is concerned. It doesn't say a darn thing about whether or not the person might be granted parole. It would only be determine eligibility for parole at some later date, if I understand. Is that correct, Doug? The burden isn't defined in the APA, which is why you have to do it.
I'm talking about the burden as defined in the sense of the standard of proof. And then I think there probably ought to be a separate provision with respect to state provided right to counsel. State provided counsel.
I can't imagine there'd be any objection to that.
The structure of the APA is such that it really reads as though the agency is moving party.
Well, if we've got problems with the APA conforming with this bill, we can amend the APA in 1968 when it comes back.
No, there's no need to amend the APA. All we need to do is make specific alterations to APA procedure for this particular point. I don't want to see us mess around with the APA, with all due respect. I think we can modify the kind of contested case that it is without creating general problems. The problem is that under the APA, it's the agency that serves notice, it's the agency that gives written charges, and that's not really appropriate in a case of this kind, where it's, I would assume, the petitioner. I'm wrong about that. I think the APA's language is probably broad enough
The APA language is broad. Do you have any amendments, Representative Myers?
This is the area with which I'm really concerned. One of the questions, though, with respect to if a prisoner's status personally can see this kind of a change. prohibition, as I understand, the prohibition against work release, for example, would be lifted.
Yeah.
In the face of someone who had been sentenced by the present law.
Correct.
Now, what restrictions are we going to put into this? If we amend the bill with the Kulongoski amendments, what restrictions are we going to place on our lease agreements?
No new restrictions are contemplated by the amendment. It's a substitution of the tribunal that will determine if someone is capable of rehabilitation.
Okay. Now, are we going to turn any more people out? Is this bill intended to keep us from turning more people out?
Than the president of the
office?
I would presume so.
Okay. Are there any additional suggested amendments?
You know, most of the murders that take place are by murderers who will never do it again. The spouse kind of killing thing. I'd like to see those amendments because as it now states, in all cases, the defendant shall be sentenced to imprisonment for life. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. If we want to get it to Carl Bowles, that's one thing. We want to just indiscriminately send up for life all kinds of people who were never going to commit a violent crime again. It doesn't make any sense.
One condition of parole, they're going to have to serve 6 months, even if it's a minor violation.
Yeah, that's an incentive against minor violations.
And also one way or the other part of the court.
Okay.
Come to a more progressive committee initially.
We understand that some of the rest of them done.
Objections to these type of amendments. Okay, any other amendments that might be suggested? You won't have to identify all the lines. We can adopt the amendments in their sense. 3 years to 2 years. Are there any other amendments?
Got a 9-year clock.
under current practice, you can do years and years and years before you get the program.
Okay,
of course, we passed the mandatory every other year review that we're not already in.
This is a guy who's doing a non-rehabilitation test. Actually, to get back from under that, he's not automatic.
No. No, if he gets out from under it, he is.
This is after denial.
He doesn't get petitioned for another 3 years.
We're only dealing here with the reconsideration of the question of bringing him out from under that.
Well, what could, I mean, he could get out from under this and get a hearing in 2 years, automatically thereafter.
We've more or less agreed on the Kurangoski amendments. We'll look at with a couple additional things. The state providing counsel to prisoners. Burden on the prisoner is proved beyond a reasonable doubt if he's rehabilitated.
How does he prove that? Somebody's got to prove it. And the purpose of the bill, I think
you've had him locked up for the last 3 years.
He's provided counsel. Okay, are there any other amendments?
Move that the death penalty be deleted.
Oh, that's the first amendment that's been suggested. We're still in the subcommittee. Okay, does anybody else have any amendments? Is there anybody that objects to this bill if you amend it with the three suggested amendments?
Yes. Is it three? You got the death penalty in there, Richard.
The death penalty is not in the bill.
Oh, no. That's an objection. Is that amendment still in?
No, that's one of the three suggested.
Three amendments have been suggested. Right. One is to delete the, right now the bill as it stands includes the bill passed by the Senate plus all of amended House Bill 2512, which are the provisions as drafted by the Attorney General for the imposition of death.
I questioned whether the amendments were properly
marked. Marks, the question was ruled on earlier and is now out of order to discuss it. In addition and then the Kulongoski amendments have been suggested with Representative Frohnmeyer's suggestion on burden of proof, Representative Marks' suggestion on the State Council, and Representative Marks' suggestion on the non-rehabilitatable change from 3 years to 2 years. Are there any additional amendments? Back into session, they won't be able to support the amendment. Yeah.
With the death penalty in?
Out.
Out. Okay, I've got you, Richard. You're running along with it. Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to have a hard time. Mr. Marks still feel I have a hard time. Is there anybody else that feels that hard?
I don't see impossible.
I just haven't.
There's a simple way to do that. In your amendment to line 19, after insert contested case hearings under ORS 183.310, et cetera, just add something like the burden of proof in such proceedings shall rest with the petitioner.
I think we understand what the burden would be. Beyond a reasonable doubt, that would work.
I don't think you can do that.
By a preponderance.
Yeah.
Now, Representative Marks has suggested an amendment that is attempting to be amenable to him.
This act isn't applicable at all to people who have already been convicted, right?
Is it? I believe that's correct. I believe that's correct. Okay, now is there anybody with this series of amendments that feel that they won't be able to support the bill?
I don't think I'm supporting
Representative Marks.
specifically, you want to put it off because right now, don't you? The problem is I'd like to get together and I'd like to talk to some people.
That's fine.
Before you put it out.
I'm going to put the bill out, so if you can talk to the people involved.
Okay, and if we can get it back because there's some problems, we're agreeable to bring it back.
We've always been amenable to almost everything.
Does this make the Gillette changes in the definition of murder that we tried to get earlier?
I would suggest that there is a conflict with this bill if we were to pass it out with Council 2540, which I think is the piece of legislation you just referred to, which would create 2 degrees of manslaughter.
Yeah.
And we could resolve that conflict by deleting sections 10, 11, and 12, because they are merely a retype of the sections that define 2540, which has passed both houses. You also have a conflict with House Bill 2645, which I believe is in your paper right after your amendment, which repeals a section which was amended by Senate Bill 1014 and substitutes the biennial review interview on the parole board.
Okay. Just one other thing. Remember, there were some concerns about the bill because of the inability of them to transfer inmates from one institution to the hospital or to something like that. What the burden? I think that was Stevie. Have those been taken care of?
I believe those have been taken care of by the deletion of Section 17.
Can I ask a question, Stevie?
One second.
Stevie, have you seen the amendments?
Suppose a person is serving concurrent life sentences under a federal RAF and under a state RAF or under two different state RAFs. Would these amendments preclude the transfer of that prisoner out of the state of Oregon to North Carolina?
No, I think so.
Well, we've got all these prohibitions against transfer, and I just wonder whether inadvertently they create a problem there.
The prohibitions that remain in the bill are specific prohibitions against
Let's put
parole,
a special clause
work release, forced camps, and work camps.
Put in a special provision.
And temporary leave. And those
the,
are the only
we're happy to get them out of the state. So let's put in a provision.
You can do that.
The amendments that the Senate put in on page 6 and 7, those are merely the amendments that we had in a prior bill, are they not?
Yes, they are. Sections 10, 11, and 12 are merely House Bill 2540.
Yes, sir.
I
would move
on.
Are there any
opposed sections? They've already been enacted in the
have the old language in it then?
No. This has
the
language
is already approved by the legislature.
Okay, any further questions or suggested amendments?
What about 2645?
You have the bill in your book?
Yes.
You didn't have fun of it? Alright. 2645, if I recall, repealed ORS 144222. Is that right?
Contract.
220. 220, right. 1014 amend 144220 to say that that section will not apply to an individual convicted of murder and sentenced under Section 4 of the Act, which is the determination that he is incapable of rehabilitation. We have a conflict because one bill has repealed that section, and 2645 has passed both houses, I believe, that or did today.
I suggest that we
you could, if you want to prohibit the review, periodic review and interview contemplated by 2645, I would suggest that you amend that section of 2645 in a manner in which Section 8 or 144220 is amended by A. and Gross Senate Bill 1014. And that would be one way to resolve that conflict.
Okay, we'll leave it up to the Council to resolve the conflict.
Well, it is
now
a subsidy decision. I can go one way or the other.
Well, we'll leave you with the discretion.
Thank you.
there any other amendments to the bill that might be suggested? Is Representative Mark still the only member that's not amenable to approval of the amendments in the bill?
I'm not sure they can hear it.
Representative Kulongoskin. We've got a few more minutes to act here. We've got several more bills.
Okay, sir.
You okay, man?
Yeah.
You prepared to support the amendments? And the bill
if you've got four votes, you can vote no. Are you prepared?
Mr. Stoltz, are you prepared?
Yeah.
Mr. Myers, are you prepared?
Doesn't
Mr. Marks, are you prepared?
Yeah, I'm prepared to vote.
Okay. The Special Subcommittee on Criminal Rights is adjourned. Judiciary Committee is called to order, and the clerk will take note of those present. The balance are excused. Representative Myers moves in Senate Bill 10014 to do the following things. Delete Representative Stoltz. Representative Stoltz moves to delete the provisions of amended House Bill 2512. From the bill, which were adopted into the bill yesterday, it's being spoken to the county judiciary. Representative Stoltz moves the amendments suggested by Representative Kulongoski, including the burden of proof on the prisoner based on a preponderance of the evidence, and the state providing counsel to the prisoner.
That's not the APA statement.
No, I know it's not.
Did he talk to make a thing?
I believe that it was.
Yeah.
And I think it should read, notwithstanding the provisions of law as 183450.
Even proper form. Representative Marks suggests that 3 years. The Marks suggest that 3 years be delayed to 2 years. And the solution of all conflict happens with this bill.
Am I right,
Counselor?
Medical relief not within 10.
Are there any other additional suggestions? If not, are there any objections to Representative Stoltz's amendment to the bill?
Which one is
that?
All
the amendments.
Any objections?
Taking
out no one objects to the amendments. They're ordered by unanimous consent. Now, Representative Stoltz moves amended Senate Bill 10014 to the floor as amended. Are there any objections to that? Representative Marks, Representative Cronemeyer, object. Object, Representative Gilman. So ordered. Okay. Now let's see. Someone was interested in Senate Bill 770.
No. Where was it? 597?
770.
No, I know.
We're here on the House floor in 4 minutes, aren't we? You're going to bring... I'm running another bill. Okay. Who was interested in
Senate
Bill
770?
There we are.
Okay.
Me, I think.
Okay.
I thought it was one of the members, I'm sorry.
The bill simply...
Could you give your name?
I'm sorry, Chris Atney, Route 4, Box 319, and Eugene. The bill simply provides a procedure to determine the legal status of those children who are conceived by the method of artificial insemination, and provides a procedure to ensure that the donor is not carrying any genetic defect and has not been the donor to more than 20 such successful inseminations in the state, so that you don't have a large pool of people of perhaps the same age who are half brothers and sisters without realizing it. And I can go into what this is, but basically in the case of the latter, well, the genetic matters are up to the physician. The physician starts with making sure that the donor is checked out on the matter. And he is to register each successful donor's name in a protected file with the state health department, I believe it is, so that he can then ask in the future whether such and such a person is still eligible as a donor, so that you don't have people doing what has been done in the case of blood transfusions and becoming professional donors, that there is some money involved.
Questions?
say why this bill is needed. Under the present laws, the children were technically illegitimate, at least in those cases where the husband is known to be infant or sterile, even though everyone has agreed it's all fine and so on. This simply establishes that the child is not illegitimate, is a legitimate child, has all the same rights.
Was a lot of the article done on this subject you happen to know?
I wouldn't be surprised if that these are people from the law school who originally wrote the bill. I was not involved in that. I got involved with the paper. Mm-hmm. On his family.
Okay, any questions? Anyone interested in the bill? It's a co-sponsor, I guess. Desire of the Committee on Senate Bill 770.
I move it to the floor if you pass.
Let's see if there's a show of hands. Are there four votes for this matter on a motion to the floor? Hardy? Are there four votes for 770?
To adopt not required of the imprisoned parent a sentence of term of not less than 5 years in actual prison.
It changed it from 3 to 5.
I don't understand what it even does. Ted,
I could explain or. Okay, why did Opie count playing?
Chuck, go ahead.
I'm the deputy director of Marion Pope Legal Aid, and the reason for this bill is that we represent inmates out of the institution. What happens is that an adoption is filed against the inmate out there, either by the spouse that's out or by a relative if the child is in foster care. Now, as soon as the person is sentenced to more than 3 years, his consent is no longer required under the statute as it now appears. So what we've done is to increase the 3 years to 5 years and state that he has actually must serve the 5 years. The other area that this problem arises is if an inmate contacts me to visit his children, the children are in foster care. If I try to arrange visitation in the foster care or there are adoptive parents interested, I have been threatened that if I go ahead with and try to force the visitation, that they will then proceed with an adoption and they can do it without my client's consent.
Does this have any effect on termination of parental rights?
No. There is a case that I wanted to bring to your attention. It's called State v. Grady, which involved the termination of parental rights for a woman at OWCC quite some years ago. Court did not speak to this amendment and it has not been a subsequent case. This statute appears in the adoption statutes, not in the termination of the parental rights.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Just one. Is it my understanding that you're saying if he's sentenced for more than 3 years, that even if he doesn't serve them?
Yeah, as long as he's in the institution, as soon as he is sentenced 3 years. The day he's sentenced to 3 years, they don't need his consent.
And if he only spends 2 years, let's say he only spends a year.
Yeah, if he's out, then I do not think the statute applies.
Okay, here's my problem. He gets sentenced today. If his wife would, somebody would file for an adoption paper, and they got it through in the next 6 months.
Oh, yeah, he's done.
And even though he only serves a year.
Right.
And he goes out on parole.
As soon as he is sentenced in excess of 3 years, his consent is no longer required under the present statute. And that, I must admit, our sample that we see is entirely biased because it's only the parents who are trying to keep the family together that even make the effort to contact us.
Okay, are there any questions about the bill?
Take a motion on
it. Let me express this concern on the other side of the coin. That if there, and certainly there are circumstances where, even though maybe he hasn't been there 3 years yet, he might be, and the guy obviously isn't, to probably could have his parental rights terminated. It'd be another way to go. But there isn't anything they can do with that child in the interim during that period of time other than put it in foster care or guardianship or something like that. So it would delay the
in a number of cases, and I assume adoptions, which perhaps would occur after this period of time.
If my experience of them is if the parent is not interested, he doesn't object.
He'll sign.
And I, like I said, my sample is entirely biased because it's only those who consult me trying to keep them.
I'd hate to create a situation where a child couldn't be adopted if it seemed to be the best thing for us.
Okay, are there any additional comments? Anybody interested in the bill? Representative Kulongoski votes the bill before the group passed recommendation. Any objections to the bill? I'm afraid you don't have enough votes today.
Put on a hand.
Dick, one other thing before we get up there. On 1014, it was my understanding that the amendments were to take the court out of determining of whether the person was rehabilitatable or not.
I think that's right.
And that includes the initial determination.
The initial determination is before the parole board?
Yes. The judge sentenced.
Who has the burden of that point?
It's the same thing. Be fixed up to the fact that the person.
Every individual sentenced. Or murder,
that's right.
Going to have the burden of proving
that
he is rehabilitatable.
That's right.
Judiciary, can